Why don't you bring Christian greetings to each one this morning? And it too is a privilege to be here and to be in a renovated place that's nice to worship. And it's just great. So thank you for that, all of you that have worked on that. Also, appreciate the thoughts that were shared in both the devotional and the opening this morning. It's just, we're very blessed. And I want to wish a happy Mother's Day to all of the ladies here this morning. I learned something this week. I guess maybe it wasn't this week, but after I was older, that was interesting to me, and the fact that I've felt for a long time that the Christian home is the closest thing to heaven on earth that we're going to find here. And the reason is because the people we love are there, the people that are important to us. And there's peace, there's joy. And whenever there's trouble away from home, the best place to be is to go home. And I think that follows us through life. When we're here as pilgrims and strangers, and we have some joys, but we're all, I trust, looking for our heavenly home. And our earthly home should be a reflection of that. And mother is a huge part of that atmosphere. Roughly half of us will never qualify to have one of the greatest jobs in the world, the greatest position, simply because of our gender. We weren't given that choice. And I would never want to be a mother, actually. I admire you, but I don't want to be one of you. So, there we are. Some disqualify themselves by choice, which is unfortunate, and some just are mothers of other kinds, and I appreciate those kinds of mothers as well. But I am delighted to honor a group that is deep into the work of motherhood. It's a very honorable calling, and God bless you. Some of you have one child, and it completely fills your life. Some of you have twice that many, and you know how much work that is. But some of you have many, many times more than that. And you know how that fills your life there too. I want to speak a little bit of my mother. I'm so privileged to have her with us yet today, and I keep, you know, sometimes old timers will say they just don't make them like that anymore. Well, I can say that of Mom. They don't make them like that anymore. When she was 19, she married Dad, and she had six little girls to take care of right off the bat. I wonder how many 19-year-old girls we have here that would be able to do that right off the bat. And then, before she was 26, I was born, and I was number four of her own children, of the children that she bore. And then there was five more after that. And so by the time the last one came along, there was a lot of us. In fact, some of my older sisters had already married and were having children of their own. So some of my younger brothers were born uncles when they were right at the same time there. Steve and Jonathan were just really close. They were born in the same year. But like all of my siblings, I never doubted her love and her care. And it was no doubt that positive influence in my life shaped my mind of what motherhood was and shape that role. Mom was always the most important as a boy. I'm going to back up a little bit. As a boy, Mom was definitely the most important person in the world to me. And even though love in words was not often verbalized, and maybe never, I can't remember ever saying, I can't remember that she told us over and over again that she loved us. She does now, but I don't know that that was a big thing. But it was her actions and her care that did that. And one of the big things was simply being there. When we came home from school, if Mom wasn't there, something wasn't right. And most often, or very often, she would drive us to and from school. But when it wasn't, when she wasn't there, it was something was very different, out of place, and it wasn't good. I remember I really enjoyed vacation Bible school, and I remembered one time that Mom, while we were gone, all of us, most of us, the house was just with little children there, and Joseph there, she made Cracker Jack, caramel corn we called it Cracker Jack, but it was caramel corn. And that was a really, really special treat. And so one time I said, Mom, could you make caramel corn while we're gone today, or Cracker Jack while we're gone to Bible school? And I came home, and here was two big roasters full of caramel corn. That was, you know, it was really something. One time Mom disappeared, and we couldn't find her, and everybody was looking for Mom. Everybody was rushing around looking for Mom. She had just disappeared. And then we found her. She was down in our ugly basement, down behind the furnace, just wanting to a little peace and quiet, she said. My brother Paul said, he was just a little guy, about 3 years old. He said, Mom just wants a piece of quiet. And so I guess she had her ways of getting it, but we didn't know how. But that was my memories. Very, very warm memories of Mother. And it's a very, very special person. And you know, those of you that know her, she still is that way for me today. But then my wife became the queen of my life. And on our first date, Mom actually pushed me out of the nest a little bit. She said, David, there's a lot of nice girls. There's some nice girls in our church. And if you don't start dating pretty soon, I'm not going to feel sorry for you if you don't get anybody. And I already had my mind on one. And I was going to ask her. I was all ready to, but maybe I needed that little push. I don't know. But anyhow, I didn't tell her that I had this planned. And when she saw I was getting ready to go to church early one evening, she said, I want to know where you're going. And so I told her, and she said, well, praise the Lord. And so I knew I had her blessing before, but I didn't really communicate that with her, and I don't recommend doing that now. Times have changed, but those were the times back then. And when I finally got the courage to ask Marcia, and she said yes, or she said, I guess, actually. And I always teased her about that. She, on our first time together, she pulled out her high school yearbooks. And we had some connections. She had gone to high school, but I had taken home study courses. And we both had a love for literature. And she was, she just told me her high school, her experiences and her spiritual walk. And I still remember well how she said, "This was my senior year," and that's supposed to be the top, but she said, "This was my best year." It was a junior year. And it was a year when the school had a revival right there at school. And I don't know what was happening in the community. I think there was were meetings going on there. But in chapel in the morning, whoever had chapel, it was a huge event for the school to undergo a revival there at school, and it was something that impacted her, and is still true today. The many ways that I can tell that her heart is turned toward God. I'd like to read Proverbs 31, starting with verse 10. This is a very familiar chapter to those of us that are familiar with the book of Proverbs, and the chapter 31 is, I'm sure, familiar to most of you ladies. Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband does safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant ships. She bringeth her food from afar. She rises also while it is yet night and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. She considereth a field and buyeth it. And with the fruit of her hands she planteth a vineyard. She girdeth her loins with strength, and strengtheneth her arms. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor. Yea, she reacheth forth her hand to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow, for all of her household are clothed with scarlet. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. She maketh fine linen and selleth it, and delivereth girdles unto the merchant. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She openeth her mouth with kindness. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praiseth her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. I'm impressed with the different ways that the influence of this virtuous woman is reflected in other people around. Notice in verse 28, it says, her children rise up, call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. And maybe that happened first, I don't know. But anyhow, at any rate, it's there, and it's true for lots of you. The thing that I've learned recently is that I never had a relationship with my grandparents growing up. I didn't learn that just now, but it's true in my life. I didn't have a relationship. Dad's parents were both gone before I was born. And My grandmother on mom's side died when I was 14, and her grandpa died, her father died a few years later, but because of shift in cultures, I never really got to know them as a person. And I don't know if they didn't really, I'm sure, know who I was either. And so I really didn't have a relationship, but I didn't miss it because I didn't know what it was. And not until my peers started becoming grandparents did I realize that, hey, this is really a pretty good thing. And I started having, when then we started having grandchildren, I thought, this is really a good thing. And I love the relationship that we can have. But growing up, I never missed it because I didn't have it. I didn't know what it was. And sometimes I think maybe that's what's happened in our homes. You don't have a good relationship and you don't miss it because you don't know what it's like. I want to tell you that it's the closest thing to heaven on earth that you can have, if it's good. And following God's way is the way to get it there. And having that foundation that I can see in my wife, where her heart is turned toward God, is one of the most important ways, is the most important way to get there. For we have a lot of children here in church. We have a lot of young people, a number of young people, but we really have a lot of children. And the Bible says for you, it says, honor thy father and thy mother. This is one of the Ten Commandments. And this was so important that God wrote it on stone initially. And he said, honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Moses, when he was speaking of the law later, he reiterated that when he says, honor thy father and thy mother, as the Lord thy God hath commanded thee, that thy days may be prolonged, and that it may be well with thee in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Thou knowest, Jesus said, when someone asked, what's the most important commandments? He says, thou knowest the commandments. Do not commit adultery. Do not kill. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Honor thy father and thy mother. And Paul, when he is writing to the church at Ephesus, he says, children, honor thy father and thy mother, which is the first commandment with promise. Again and again, the word comes to us as children, as young people, to honor. And what do we mean by honor? There's a number of things, number of ways that you can build that foundation of honor where you really appreciate what your parents have done. Thank your parents for what they've done and what they are doing. I was much too old when I realized the cost that my parents did to put us where we are today, the personal cost to them. And I thank them for what they've done. Communicate plans and goals. And I told you I was a poor communicator. That's an important thing to do, to honor, to ask for advice. Most of us feel like we're walking this path and we have to make our own way. But for all of you, your parents have walked the way that you're walking. And it's really important that you can get good advice from your parents because they have walked your way. And so that is important. To value your time at home. You know, I have to think about that every time I hear call them all, come around, where it says volleyball game tonight, 7 o'clock. You know, you don't have to go to every volleyball game. You can. And it's important to socialize. I'm not begrudging you that. It's great. But your times at home are really good, too. And those times are going to pass. And you're going to look back and you're going to say, I wished I'd have spent more time there. I don't think you're going to look back and say, I wished I'd have played more volleyball. But I can almost promise you that the reverse will be true. So when you think about it, think that this is a good time now, and value those times that you can have with your parents at home. Be aware of what needs to be done. One of the things that was important for my father was to be able to see work. He'd be able to see it and do it. And that was a value trait for him, but it's a good one. When you're aware of what needs to be done, you don't need to be told to do everything, but do that. And when you do that with kindness, it's a tremendous honor that you're giving to your parents. So whether it's whatever it is, you can just see it. There's always dishes to be done after every meal. It seems like there's always some kind of work to be done. If you can see that and do it, you will be such a blessing to your parents. And then learn to forgive. Parents are human, and mistakes are going to be made. And if we can't, we must, for our own sake, forgive when that happens. Jesus ties our own forgiveness to the ones that we're willing to forgive. And so it's just critically important. For mothers, there is that many times they bear the bulk of the child training in those early years. And Proverbs, it tells us to chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. Proverbs 29:17, correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. I love to think about that. The correction part, not so much. But I'd like to read just a paragraph from a modern book here. And some of you are familiar with Jordan Peterson, 12 Rules for Life. And he's pretty wordy, I'll say that. But he's pretty much on target on some things, on some of the ones that I've read. One of the rules for life that he writes, he says, is do not let your children do anything that makes you dislike them. And that seems straightforward enough, doesn't it? He says, recently I watched a 3-year-old boy trail his mother and father slowly through a crowded airport. He was screaming violently at 5-second intervals. And more important, he was doing it voluntarily. He wasn't at the end of his tether. As a parent, I could tell from the tone. He was irritating his parents and hundreds of others, people to gain attention. Maybe he needed something, but there was no way to get it, and his parents should have let him know that. You might object that perhaps they were worn out and jet-lagged after a long trip, but 30 seconds of carefully directed problem-solving would have brought the shameful episode to an end, to a halt. More thoughtful parents would not let someone they truly cared for become the object of a crowd's contempt. I have watched a couple unable or unwilling to say no to their 2-year-old, obliged to follow closely behind him everywhere he went, every moment of what was supposed to be an enjoyable social visit, because he misbehaved so badly when not micromanaged that he could not be given 1 second of genuine freedom without risk. the desire of his parents to let their child act without correction on every impulse perversely produced precisely the opposite effect. They deprived him instead of every opportunity to engage in independent action. Because they dare not to teach him what no means, he had no conception of the reasonable limits enabling. It was a classic example of too much chaos breeding too much order and the inevitable reversal. He goes on and on. He never says anything twice, but there's a lot of advice on not letting your children do things that make you dislike them because of the fact that it'll be both a blessing to you and a blessing to society to have youngsters that are malleable. It says you love your kids. After all, their actions, if their actions make you dislike them, think what an effect it will have on other people who care much less about them than you. Those other people will punish them severely by omission or commission. Don't allow that to happen. Better to let your little monsters know what is desirable and what is not, so that they become sophisticated denizens of the world outside the family. A child who pays attention instead of drifting and can play and does not whine, is comical but not annoying, is trustworthy, that will have friends wherever he goes. His teachers will like him, and so will his parents. If he attends politely to adults, he will be attended to, smiled at, and happily instructed. He will thrive in what can so easily be a cold and unforgiving, hostile world. Clear rules make for secure children and calm, rational parents. Clear principles of discipline and punishment balance mercy and justice so that their social development and psychological maturity can be optimally promoted. Clear rules and proper discipline help the child and the family and society establish and maintain and expand the order that is all that protects us from chaos and the terrors of the underworld. From everything that is uncertain, anxiety-provoking, hopeless, and depressing, there are no greater gifts that a committed, courageous parent can bestow. Do not let your children do anything that makes you dislike them. Rule 5 of the 12 Rules of Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. That's just the beginning and the ending of that chapter. A mother's workload is huge, but then so are the rewards. Another bit. Beautiful poem that my wife read to me years ago. I think I probably shared it here, but it's great. 5 loaves. She never dreamt that day that as she kneaded and punched her warm soft dough with healthy yeast, shook back a wisp of hair and paused a moment, panting a bit to take a little rest. She never dreamt as deftly she divided the leavened lump and put it in the pans, then placed them on the warming shelf for rising and scraped the residue from off her hands. She never dreamt that while they were a-baking, that from these little loaves of homemade bread, when given to the hands of Christ the Master, thousands of hungry people would be fed. Plain flour and yeast, a homely duty done, a lad, a picnic lunch beside the sea, such common things she never dreamed, but then neither do we. Here are my small brown loaves, Lord. Do with them what you will. They're yours. I made them from the flour you gave me from life's mill. Margaret Penner Taves. Going back to Proverbs chapter 31. Who can find a virtuous woman? Her price is far above rubies. He described that very well. The heart of her husband, to safely trust in her. I noticed a few times that the husband comes into the focus here. This is one. Another one is when he is her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. Another is her husband rises up and calls her blessed. Her children rise up and call her blessed, and her husband praises her. And so it calls into the work of the man as well. And I'm thankful that I can experience this in real life. Safely trust. There is something about trust that is really, really important. You can't buy it. You can earn it, maybe. But trust is something that is, when it's not there, it's really difficult. But when it's there, it's a beautiful, it's something beautiful to have. And, you know, I can experience that. When you experience that in real life, it's really, really beautiful. I don't have to be afraid of what she's going to do next. I'd like to turn to Luke chapter 10. And in verse 40. Verse 38. Luke 10, verse 38. It came to pass as they went that he entered into a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha received him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, which also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was cumbered about much serving, and came to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care about my sister, that my sister hath left me to serve alone? Bid her therefore that she help me. And Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful, and Mary hath chosen that good part, which shall not be taken away from her. You know, most of the time, people that expound on the story of Martha and Mary think that Martha is the bad one and Mary is the good one. Mary is the good one, but Martha is also the good one. And if we would really identify ourselves as Martha or Mary, I think we would probably find ourselves, I'm not going to say, but I'll say this, that Martha was the one that was serving. She was the one that was felt like there was something that she needed to do for Jesus, and she wanted Mary to help, and Mary just there. She was just with Jesus, and Martha wanted something more than that out of her. So she wanted some help. But Jesus told her that one thing is needful. Mary hath chosen that good part. I think that what Jesus was actually teaching Martha, was that Mary was trusting Jesus to fill her needs. And Martha was trying to fill Jesus' needs, and it was not all bad, but it was a little different. So I have a lot of sympathy for Martha in the sense that she was doing what she could. And but Jesus wanted to put her mind at ease, at rest, and he told her that, you know, he has what she needs. Mary hath chosen that good part, and that's not going to be taken away from her. And a number of years ago, we used to say verses around the table sometimes at when our children were all at home. And I remember our daughter, especially this one, and she just chose this verse here and in Luke where it says, and Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. She said slowly after that. But she put a lot of emphasis on, and Jesus loved Martha. And that is, and I love that one. So, in doing that, why don't you think it said, and Jesus loved Mary and Martha and her sister? But he says he loved Martha. You know, so let's not give Martha the short straw. She was a great woman and still is. On the matter of prayer, another one from Margaret Penner Taves. I was going to pray. I was going to kneel. Excuse me. Running dry. Water's so important. I was going to pray. I was going to kneel and talk to God, but the baby cried. Then I made breakfast, packed the lunches, and combed some hair. The bus was coming, but I bade each my tribe kneel by a chair, and I prayed with them. But it wasn't the prayer I had meant to pray. A tender communion, my head laid down on the lap of God. I was going to pray, but a neighbor came to borrow some salt, and we chatted a bit of things that had nothing to do with salt and shared a breath of eternity. I bandaged a bruise, and a little one came and begged for a story, the Jonah tale, how the whale threw up and spat him out, a startled, bedraggled, but wiser man. Thus through the day I was going to pray. I yearned for the peace I would find alone in the closet of prayer. But instead I had to go and make peace and negotiate truces by sandboxes and swings. Once I went and did kneel down, but the doorbell rang. A young man needing the use of a tire pump. How could I say, I can't be bothered, I'm going to pray? Then the children came home from school, pile on me their triumphs and troubles, a mother's trophies. I listened and learned. I eased a hurt, taking one child too big for my lap, for a little while on my lap again. Together we sent his pain to the heart of God. Evening came and I hadn't prayed. Oh, I had talked to my deity all day long, but you know how it is with broken conversations. The thread gets tangled. Father came home, supper done. We gathered our little tribe. We read the Bible and prayed while Father talked to God. Tucking the children in, we kissed them all. And finally, then, I went and prayed. I knelt by my bed and laid my head in the lap of God, but I fell asleep. Then I dreamed a dream. I dreamed he told me through the day it had been his bruises I'd kissed away, that it was to him that I had told the tale of Jonah hunched in the hollow whale, that it was his problem I'd listened to. I'd loaned him salt and tied his shoe. He had come to the door and asked for aid. He'd gotten the buns and the bread I'd made. I woke with a start and went to bed and fell asleep in the arms of God. Another beautiful motherhood story by Margaret Penner Taves. With that as a foundation, you can see that she openeth her mouth with wisdom and her tongue is a law of kindness. So, in knowing that the home is a safe place for our children and trying to build a home for a safe place as a safe place for our children and trying to turn our youngsters' hearts to God. It's a big thing. It's a huge job that we can't do on our own. But God has given us the resources that wherever we are, as our heart is turned toward Him, and we seek His way, and have a relationship with Him, that He can guide our heart. Certainly, He can guide us to something, to green pastures, and to something that is fulfilling in life. I just love the story, the allegory that Joseph was giving us this morning about living water being such an important part. It is what flows through. Christ flowing through us is refreshing to all that meet us when we are truly one of His. And so, God bless you, mothers, as you work in the home. Your work is tremendous. And may He grant you wisdom, grace, and may you be honored, especially on this day. Lord bless you. Let's kneel for prayer.